Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome back to another episode of PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host for the evening, Nate Lindberg. You can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I write the NXT hits and misses, and I did write one for tonight. I usually try to actually get it posted on PWTorch.com, there seems to be an issue with WordPress, and it's not letting me. So I'll try to post it up after I finish this podcast here, and hopefully by the time anybody's listening to the recording is listening to this, they can go to pwtorch.com and check out my hits and misses column. You can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I don't know if I said that or not, but you can find me there if you don't already follow me. And we're here to talk about NXT for September 5th, 2023. This was kind of a bit of a it felt like a bit of a reset show for me. I feel like there was a lot of things here that we started a lot of different, like, newer stories tonight. There were obviously some other stories we kind of continued on from last week and weeks prior as well, you know, with, like, Dominic Mysterio coming in as a special guest referee and things like that. The fact that I'm here by myself tonight's thrown off my normal, typical flow. Usually I'll throw to Bruce or to Kelly and, they can give me their opinion and, you know, whatever. And then I kind of, there's just that natural back and forth banter, but I'm here by myself and I probably sound a little awkward. And if I do, apologies, but hey, you know, I'm awkward. So in the main event tonight, we had Von Wagner versus Bron Breakker. This was a no disqualification match where right before the match, Von Wagner basically vowed he was going to table Bron Breakker. As a matter of fact, before the match, Von Wagner was actually sitting. He was shown, it was kind of like taped earlier in the night, but, you know, it was one of those things, was shown before the match happened where Von Wagner's like having this conversation and, you know, the camera's like right up in his face looking at him and he's kind of talking and he's like, you know, before you came into my life, things weren't great. Now the fans are cheering and things are looking my way. And he's talking about how everything's looked up for him. And, you know, you kind of think maybe he's talking to Robert Stone or Mr. Stone. They haven't called him Robert Stone in a while now, Mr. Stone. And, you know, maybe you kind of think, you know, that's who he's talking to. And he's kind of having this little bit of a heartfelt moment, but no. He's talking to an inanimate object. He's talking to a table. He's talking to the announce table, to be more specific, which is kind of even weirder. But they kind of, you know, they zoom out a little bit, and he's just kind of like caressing the table. And it was kind of awkward and weird. But you know what? People liked it. The people in the building cheered for it, unless they piped audio in for it, which, I mean, that's certainly possible, but I don't think that was what it was. It sounded like it was probably people in the attendance in the building that kind of popped for that. During the match itself, when we actually did get to the table spot towards the end of the match, which wasn't actually the finish, believe it or not, but towards the end of the match, got to the table spot, the crowd went absolutely bananas. Probably the biggest pop I've heard for Bron Breakker, probably ever. It was a pretty big pop for Bron Breakker. Von Wagner. The names are so close. I hope I don't keep screwing it up. But it was a big pop for Von Wagner as he put Bron Breakker through the table. Shortly after that, Von Wagner gets Bron Breakker back in the ring. You know, Bron Breakker gets a crotch shot in there, low blow, as they like to call it. Good old China style too, like right from behind. You get the whole forearm showing right in the front of the crotchal area, if you will. But it was, it reminded me very much of like how China used to throw her low blows back in the day. Obviously allowed Hulk Hogan to pose. I mean, Roman Reigns to get the spear. I mean, Bron Breakker to get the spear here and pick up the win in our main event. I wasn't super invested in this match, to be honest with you. Out of almost every match here tonight that we had, matter of fact, let me scroll through real quick. I want to actually see. Yeah, out of every single match here we had tonight, even though this is our main event and, you know, it's supposedly more important than, like, our NXT title angle where We didn't really have Mello on the show too much tonight, but, you know, we were trying to figure out a couple things with the title here tonight. And, you know, those weren't important enough to be in the main event or whatever. Instead, we had our big men slapping man meat. I don't know. It wasn't what I was looking forward to here tonight. Von Wagner. I mean, I like Cal Bloom. Like, I like the guy. I feel like he's a halfway decent worker, and like, yeah, he's been in the company for a while. Like, I want to see him succeed, right? And I feel like this gimmick he's got right now is going to do that. I mean, I'm not like a huge fan of what he does between the ropes personally, as a big man, but I think he'll get there. I'd kind of like to see him move a little bit more like Baron Corbin. I think he's kind of getting there. Kind of like how Baron Corbin moves in the ring as heel and things like that. Although Von Wagner does look like he's going, moving a little bit more face now with this table gimmick here. But Bron Breakker, man, like, I've talked about this a few times on the show in the past, and I'm sure we'll talk about it again going forward at some point here. But, you know, Bron Breakker, he hasn't connected with me. I know he hasn't connected with Bruce. I know he hasn't connected with Kelly. You know, he's essentially the same character that he was before going heel. Wow, my voice just cracked like I was 15 years old. His, you know, he's still heel, like he's still the same character he was before going heel, but it's the same character, just, you know, a little bit angrier and beardier, and he wears more black, and does a few more cringier things, like, you know, wear a wolf mask to the ring, at Battleground. He's, I can see why they see something in him, and there's definitely that it factor there with him, but he's got to do something more to connect with the crowd. I think his offense is there. Like, his in-ring work is totally there. His mic work might be as good as we're going to get, considering the bloodline. Well, hold on. Let me rephrase that. The family lineage he comes from, could be as good as we're going to get out of him. Might get a little bit better as time goes, unless he gives us something as genius as the Steiner math promo. So, you know, there's that, but there's something that he needs to do something with his gimmick and his presentation to connect with the audience a bit more. And I'm wondering if maybe that's what they're trying to do here with the finish to our main event angle here tonight. I think I might have said, going back here, and of course I don't have Kelly or Bruce to correct me when I say something stupid and trip over my words, but I think I might have said Bron got the pinfall win, and I can't remember if I did or not, but if I did, that's not what I meant to say. Bron got the win. I'm assuming the match was essentially stopped after Bron Breakker picked up the steel or separated the steel steps and put Von Wagner's head on the lower half of the steps and then proceeded to make an Oreo sandwich out of Bron Breakker's head and the bottom of the steps and the top of the steps. Von Wagner being the creamy center of that steel chair or steel step Oreo sandwich. I was trying to paint a nice picture and I kept just stumbling over my words. I'm sorry. But yeah, we had Von Wagner getting his head, you know, like his kappa was detated, apparently. Any of the Office fans, hopefully you get that stupid little reference there. What I did like about this was it was a very violent angle, and they didn't actually linger on it. When there's like a wardrobe malfunction or something like that, they'll cut to black. You can still hear the audio usually, but the cut to black, or sometimes, you know, the audience is swearing or somebody swears, they cut the audio, you can see the video. Well, in this case, they cut the video, not the audio, for about 20 seconds, and you just heard Vic Joseph screaming about how much of a bastard Von Wagner is and all this, or sorry, Bron Breakker is for doing this to Von Wagner. The names are so similar. I hope I'm not confusing everybody like I'm confusing myself. But an ass that Bron Breakker is doing this to Von Wagner, and just people screaming. You could hear, like, you know, holy shit chants. You could hear the crowd like really kind of marking out for this. I'm really interested to know what it looked like in the building. I wish Tom Stope was still on the show, because I miss you, Tom. Tom, I do. But not only that, Tom used to go to the shows every single week, and then we'd wait about a half an hour. Him, Kelly, and I would jump on the show. We'd talk about it. We'd be able to get the in-person's perspective. I would love to know what it looked like in the building when Von Wagner's head was supposedly crunched between the steel steps. They didn't really show it on TV. I think they did a good job of making it look good. But for the audience, like, the audience was kind of like, I don't want to say freaking out a little bit, but it wasn't like that, you know, if something's cheesy, the audience is going to tell you it's cheesy. And it didn't seem like that. It seemed like they genuinely kind of enjoyed what, you know, what they saw here. So, or well, I don't know if enjoyed is the right word. Maybe horrified, probably more horrified. Overall, like, I kind of like the end angle with Bron Breakker getting a little bit more vicious and it cutting to black, and kind of that not that I can, you know, not that I want like violence and whatever, but like just that added edge to the Bron Breakker character is intriguing for me, considering that I don't really give a crap about Bron Breakker. Don't really give a crap about Von Wagner either, as I keep saying. So the fact that I'm kind of interested in seeing what Bron Breakker is going to be doing here is probably a good sign. It, I think, is going to give him a little bit more of an edge, and hopefully kind of make people take him a little bit more seriously as a heel. So I know I don't. And you know, last week they didn't do him any favors with that little backstage segment they had with him and Baron Corbin, where Baron Corbin just kind of talked to him like he was an idiot. And Bron Breakker tried to rebut, you know, have some sort of a rebuttal, but he just sounded like more of an idiot. I don't think they intended on that. And I think they thought that he sounded kind of badass, but it was like, nah, dude, that was pretty cringe. That was pretty cringe. I can't remember exactly what was said, but I do remember. I do remember we talked about it last week, so you can check that out in the archives, I guess. But also, like, I just what stood out in my head was, wow, Bron Breakker, you kind of look like a moron up against in a verbal wits here against Baron Corbin. I don't know if he's Sicilian, but don't go up against the Battle of Wits against a Sicilian. I butchered the line. God, that's what I have. That's what happens when I don't have anybody here to play off. I just try to quote the Princess Bride and hope I can do it. We do have somebody in the caller queue. I think I know who this is, but the last time I tried to guess, I got it wrong. So, area code 814, I'm going to bring you on the show. Hopefully you just heard the thing say unmuted, and let me know what you thought of the show.
It was a fine show, and probably a little bit above average, but not too much higher than that, I would say.
All right. So, Ryan, cool. What do you got for us tonight?
My first question's on Von Wagner. Do you feel this is a way to write him off the show with the screen going black at the end of the show? Maybe get a try on the main roster or take a several months break at least?
You know, I would hope so. I mean, with how viciously they tried to sell that by, I mean, Vic Joseph just kind of trying to almost channel Michael Cole's, like, for the love of man, or not love of man, the for love of mankind. That was a terrible quote from Michael Cole when Shane went off the top of the cell. It was JR's quote, rather, you know, from top of the Hell in the Cell or something like that. You hear Vic Joseph just screaming. I forget exactly what he said. It was something about you bastard. For how they try to sell that, I hope that he's off TV for a little bit. You know, we shouldn't be seeing Von Wagner coming back next week and, you know, like playing it off like he's fine. The only way that can happen is, and this is, I almost feel bad bringing this up because it is a man's real life medical condition, but I also don't know much about the condition. Most people probably don't. So you can probably say whatever you want about it. But he did have that, you know, that medical condition. I'm not even going to try to pronounce it or pretend like I know what it was called. But obviously he had that medical condition. They showed those photos of him as a kid, you know, the cranial reconstruction, all that. So maybe they go, you know, they say, oh, he's got like steel plates in his head. So like, he's Superman, you know, so he his head didn't get crushed or something. They could certainly go that route. I don't know if I'm a real big fan of that because, of, like I said, it kind of takes, even though they're already taking a real-life medical issue that he had as a kid and kind of bringing the story, it then almost tries to make it sound like an X-Men, like an X-Men origin story or something like that. So I don't know if I'm super for that. What I think I would like is for kind of what you're describing is to see them write him off TV for a little bit. I don't think it's time for him to go to the main roster just yet. Because obviously he almost just got murdered on live TV here. He's going to come back and, you know, get his against Bron Breakker at some point. So I'm kind of hoping, you know, maybe it's like 2 months or something like that. He's off TV. He comes back. He costs Bron Breakker a huge match, and then there's a blow off or something. You know, that's kind of the best case scenario, I think. You know, worst case scenario, they never talk about it again. Von Wagner or Bron Breakker go to the main roster. The other stays in NXT and goes on to the next thing. But with how they sold this tonight, I think personally it's going to go on and continue here in NXT. Fingers crossed, at least 6 weeks down the road. And that's still not enough to sell a big head injury, but, you know, at least long enough for people to not realize that it hasn't quite been that long, if that makes sense. Ryan, what else you got for me tonight?
My second question is on Tiffany Stratton and Kiana James. When's the last time you remember two heels fighting it out for the women's championship?
Ooh, that's a good question. Off the top of my head, I don't remember. I'd have to actually look it up. But it's not often, you know, that you see heel matches or face matches. I think probably a little more often because you can kind of tell that story of, you know, respect, and you're having, you know, a match just to see who's the better, you know, better competitor or whatever. Heel is a little bit more different. And for me, yeah, I'm actually where I don't have anybody on the show tonight. I'm curious to see how you felt about Ryan. But for me, I kind of was almost unsure who to root for here. I mean, personally, I'm rooting for Tiffany Stratton. I want her to retain or whatever. But, you know, even though Stratton was in kind of the babyface role tonight, she's still a traditionally heel character. Kiana James is also a heel character. And they're really, I thought maybe we might see some shades of gray between both of them here. And instead, we just got those shades of gray from Tiffany Stratton where, you know, she's still heel, and she had the heel mannerisms and things, but she also had some face mannerisms, and you know, she was trying to kind of fight from underneath a few times against Kiana James. So, yeah, it was a little bit of a strange, like, situation. Obviously not unprecedented. We've seen it before. But, I mean, I think the crowd was also kind of a good tell here. The crowd, I mean, you know, for some big spots or whatever, they came alive. But for the most part, the crowd was kind of dead. This is the opening match. You know, usually for an opener, the crowd's kind of on fire. It's, you know, they just got there. It's probably the first match they're seeing, maybe the second match they're seeing of the night. You know, there might have been a dark match opener or something like that. And usually that Florida crowd is pretty fired up. And they kind of seemed a little dead for the match. Plus, it also seemed a little underwhelming to me because I don't think anybody actually figured Kiana James was going to win. You know, when she won the Battle Royal, or well, I don't even remember. Was it Battle Royal? No, it was whatever the heck the tournament, the thing was last week that she won to get here tonight. She was the underdog. Like I could have made a case for any of the other three women in the match, and she was the one I could still make a sort of a case for her to win, but like she was the least likely one there, at least in my mind. But she won. She faced, obviously, Tiffany Stratton tonight. It wasn't a bad match. It was actually it was a decent match for the both of them, considering that their moveset, skill set, and all of that, and length of time, you know, in WWE. But yeah, that heel-heel dynamic, I think, left a few people, myself included, a little like, I'm not sure who I'm really supposed to be, who they want me to be rooting for here. I think Tiffany Stratton at the end of the day, but yeah, unfortunately, I don't really know what this does for Kiana James either. You know, she seemed to be getting pushed pretty heavily with, you know, the whole Fallon Henley storyline with Brooks, Brooks Jensen and Josh Briggs. I almost said Brooks and Jensen, Briggs and Jensen. She's getting pushed pretty heavily there, kind of fell off the face of the planet, won this, lost to Tiffany Stratton in a pretty decisive loss. Wasn't like it was any sort of a screwy loss. You know, Stratton picked up a clean win. And I think the biggest reason for that was for the post-match angle here with Becky Lynch coming in, not coming in, but Becky Lynch showing up on the video screen and challenging Tiffany Stratton for an NXT title match next week, which is absolutely insane to me. See Becky Lynch back in NXT challenging her for one of the titles, or the one women's title she has not yet won. So will Becky pick it up? We'll see. But I think that answered your question. Do you have any follow-up for me, Ryan, or anything else for me?
I believe that was a four-way match, how Kiana got the title shot, if my memory serves me correct.
It was a fatal four-way, yeah, you're right.
But, another question I have for you is on Tyler Bate and Dava Kato. When's the last time you've seen a cruiserweight get the airplane spin on like a super heavyweight in a match? Have you seen that ever before?
I don't know if I've ever seen anything quite like that before. I mean, Tyler Bate, I got to actually look that up. How much does Tyler Bate, how much is he billed? I think he's billed at least 205. Okay, wow. Wow, okay. Tyler Bate is billed, at least according to Wikipedia, at 175 pounds. Dava Kato, let's see. Dava Kato is billed at 351 pounds, at least according to Wikipedia. So that's pretty impressive. That's pretty impressive. It's not necessarily, I don't think it's necessarily unheard of for somebody of 175 be able to pick up 350, but like, that's still an impressive feat. I'm about 175 and I sure as hell can't pick up 350 pounds. Especially not throw it over my shoulder and spin around in circles. Definitely an impressive visual. I really need to give it to Tyler Bate here. Like, you know, he kept getting attacked by Dava Kato, came in, wanted to get his revenge, was able to get that here. Decent match, and that was certainly the highlight of the match, I think for everybody, for me especially. Just kind of seeing the big strong boy be a big strong boy, pick up Dava Kato, put him in that airplane spin. I was a little bit dizzy just watching him. Like I said, I very impressive. I can't think of a time. I mean, I can think, you know, of like Cesaro doing some cool stuff, or like, you know, John Cena, you know, with that double AA on, was it Big Show and Brock Lesnar, if I'm not mistaken, you know, and things like that. But when it comes to somebody like a cruiserweight, somebody, you know, sub 200, you know, 170 pounds, 175 pounds, 180 pounds, something like that. Oof. Yeah. I don't know if I've seen something like that. That comes to mind. Anything else?
Final question on Level Up. Is this the first time they've had like a reason for you to watch? And they've had these qualifying matches for the Heritage Cup. And it seems like that show in its history has mostly been like an enhancement like show, or to get people on the show that can't get on the main show. Like, do you remember ever there being this much focus on that show before?
There was, and I wish I had Kelly here to correct me if I'm wrong, but there was another tournament at one point, and I can't remember what it was. I want to say it was some with the cruiserweights. No, because there were women involved. It might have been I'll think of it. It was the same, I think it was the year after Carmelo Hayes won it, the breakout tournament. I think it was the breakout tournament. The second year they did the breakout tournament. It was the first year Level Up was on TV. I think they did some of the breakout tournament matches on Level Up. There was some sort of a tournament that they did break out into Level Up at one point, I'm pretty sure. But for the most part, you're right. Yeah, I mean, it's been primarily developmental matches. I mean, even more so than NXT being developmental. I mean, it's exactly what kind of the name suggests, Level Up. The undercard show for NXT. Tom Stope was kind of closely paying attention to that. I don't remember for sure, but I am pretty sure it was a breakout tournament showed up on Level Up. I'd have to look that up, but yeah, that sounds right to me. I do like the fact that they're kind of trying to give you a bit of a reason to watch it. I think I've watched 3 episodes of Level Up, to be honest with you. There's been a couple times where Tom was like, "Oh, you need to check something out," and I went ahead and I'd watch it. But for the most part, I think it's not a whole lot of people watch it. It's largely skippable. But if you are looking to see who some of the up and coming talent are going to be, some people that may not have hit NXT TV yet, certainly a good place to start and kind of you get your eyeballs on some new talent that we'll be seeing see coming our way soon. I think that's about it. Back to you.
Okay. Thanks for taking your call. I definitely do think the championship on the main, like the Heritage Cup, is a little bit more prestigious than say a a New Stars tournament, because at least it's an actual championship, I would say.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I definitely agree with that. Even if it was for something different, and I want to see it as a breakout tournament, but even if it was for something different, I think the Heritage Cup is probably like the most prestigious title they've done it for. If anything, it would have been like the Cruiserweight title before they dissolved that. But I can't even remember if they dissolved that before Level Up started. Definitely more prestigious for sure. So, but Ryan, thank you very much as always, sir. We'll look forward to talking again.
Yeah. Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely. All right. Cool. So let me check the mailbag here because, I haven't actually done that yet. Well, I did that earlier. We didn't have anything in the mailbag, but it was also like 9:30 Eastern time. The show hadn't actually finished yet. We have an email from Mr. Kevin. I'm sorry, buddy. Dr. Kevin Catani, PhD. Kevin says, salutations, gent. And he says gents, but he didn't know it was just going to be me tonight. So salutations, Nate. I'm going to ad lib. I'm going to throw it in there. Salutations, Nate. I hope this email finds you well. Tonight's show definitely had a lot going on. Besides the in-ring action, there was plenty going on backstage. I especially liked getting to see some talent we haven't seen in a while. That said, 2 things stuck out to me. First, the fan in me is bummed that Dragon Lee has to be stymied again. I know the long game is going to be in his favor, but still, dang it. Is this leading to a triple threat? Second, what's the deal with the main event? Why invest all this time in building Vaughn, giving him all these big spots and a couple near falls just for him to lose? Is there such thing as the Braun rub? I don't think so, but somebody clearly does. Where does this go for Vaughn? Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to NXT 8 years back. Office hours are now over. The Professor Kevin Picatani, PhD. If you want to be a part of the show like Ryan and Kevin have been, you can call us at 515-605-9345. Press 1 on the keypad. It'll let me know that you want to be part of the show, and it'll flag, put a little hand up next to your phone number, like you're raising your hand, like we're back in high school or something like that. And let me know you want to actually part of the show, and I'll bring you on just like I did with Ryan. Or you can email us, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. And you can send an email in just like Kevin. So I usually give that spiel before I read the email so you don't forget what I wrote, but I forgot. So, or what I read, not what I wrote, because I didn't write Kevin's email. But I forgot to do that. So, I did it out of order. So first thing Kevin was talking about was Dragon Lee being stymied, bummed again, and asking if it was leading to a triple threat. I don't know. I don't know if it's leading to a triple threat. I'm kind of hoping because I think I just want to see Dragon Lee, Wesley, and Dominic Mysterio in a ring together. Like, Dominic, he is not his father. He's not Rey Mysterio. He's tall. He's lanky. He's a bit more awkward, like, because he's tall and lanky, and he's trying to do moves that his dad at, like, you know, 5 foot 4 inches or however tall Rey Mysterio is. I'm exaggerating. Don't blow me up on Twitter. You know, however tall Rey is, he's trying to do those moves that, like, you know, I think he's like 6'1 or something like that. However tall Rey is, Dom is, he's much taller than Rey. So, you know, he doesn't quite flow in the ring like Rey does, but I think he's still a good wrestler, especially for getting thrown into the mix, bypassing NXT, you know, in the main event. He's doing a good job here. So I just want to see the three of them tear it up in the ring. I'm not usually an advocate for triple threat matches. I've said it a million times here before. I'm not going to harp on it again. I'm sure you've heard me talk about it in the past. Not a huge fan of triple threat matches, but I could be talked into this one. You know, Mustafa Ali, he is kind of playing that tweener right now where he has his moments where you're like, ooh, you're like a little snaky little mother effer, aren't you, over there? And then you've got these other moments where you're like, oh, or are you? I'm not sure. And we saw that come out here tonight in the match. So Dominic Mysterio was the special guest referee for Mustafa Ali versus Dragon Lee. Dominic Mysterio, for the most part, called this match right down the middle. I was shocked. Commentary was shocked at how fair Dominic was actually being in the match here. And that all kind of made sense in the last three seconds of this match. Mustafa Ali was able to get a schoolboy on Dragon Lee. A lot of similar names here. Ali, Lee, Dragon Lee, Wesley. Wow. Keith Lee shows up. Game's over. Mustafa Ali was able to roll up Dragon Lee. And Dominic Mysterio, quick 1-2-3 pin after a slow count just a minute ago for Dragon Lee. So it almost looked like Mustafa Ali and Dominic Mysterio were like in cahoots here, you know, with the fast pin. Mustafa Ali getting a win. Dominic is like raising his hand and they're kind of looking at each other like a little smug or whatever. More Dominic and kind of smug and like smiling than Ali, but Ali's kind of like, I couldn't tell if he was like, yeah, our plan worked, or, oh, hey, okay. Like that was cool. Wasn't expecting that, but that was cool. You know, kind of that look. But then he kind of threw that look out the window and punched Dominic in the face, kind of saying, hey, I'm not in cahoots with you after all. Don't know why you did that. Wasn't cool. I wanted to win cleanly. At least that's what they were talking about on commentary for his reasoning to do it, because you know the commentary team is a telepathic link with every wrestler, right? They don't. That's kayfabe, but, you know, whatever. I'm invested in this. I'm kind of hoping it's a triple threat, but the other way, and I could go either way. I say I'm hoping it's a triple threat. Let me rephrase that. I'd be okay with either way they go. The triple threat, I think, would be fun for just like an energetic and bombastic match. But I think it would, but I also, as more of a wrestling, I guess, purist, I don't know, I hate to use that word, but I prefer to watch a one-on-one match. If I'm going to watch a match, especially for a title, unless it's a tag title, of course. So the other way they could go here is, you know, next week there's some sort of an angle where, you know, Dominic, he can't pick exact, you know, or let's say, you know, Mustafa Ali comes out and says, hey, I won this way. I'm not a big fan of it. Dominic, what's up? Why'd you do this? I want a rematch. You know, I want to prove that I can win the right way. There's another match, either Mustafa Ali wins or, you know, Dragon Lee wins. And then boom, you've got a definitive person to face Dominic Mysterio at No Mercy. But, you know, that almost, I don't know, it seems a little underwhelming for me for something like that. With the way that the crowd was chanting triple threat during this segment, you know, I think kind of just the gravitas of the three people in the match, in this angle rather, would make for a good triple threat. So I could see them going that way. Long story short, I could see them going that way. I would be okay with it. I'd be happy with it. I could also see him kind of like trying to go for a one-on-one match too. So not 100% sure where I fall here, but I think I'm leaning triple threat if I'm going to try and predict what NXT is doing here, because I'm so great at doing that. Good boy about talking about it, not necessarily doing the armchair quarterback in here. Kevin talked about in his email here, he talked about Von Wagner and Bron Breakker. What's the deal with the main event? Why invest all this time in building Von, giving him all these big spots, the near falls, just for him to lose? Is there a thing as the Bron Breakker rub? I don't think so, but somebody does. Where does this go for Von? That was the last part of his email. We talked a little bit about that, I think, before Ryan actually came on and talked with me. I don't know. This doesn't make sense to me. Like, Von Wagner seems like he's starting to become, like, get over as an organic babyface, which is... I can't even believe I said that. Like, I can't even believe those words just came out of my face hole. But it did. Von Wagner is kind of getting this whole tabled thing over and kind of getting over as an organic babyface. They put all this time into him, not just recently, like in the last few weeks, but I mean, God, it must have been, I mean, it was at least the beginning of the summer where, you know, right now, what did I say today? What's today? Today is September 5th. I think it was beginning of the summer that we saw those photos of Von Wagner, you know, after surgery as a kid. So, I mean, this story has been going on for a while. And then, yeah, he kind of has this pretty decisive loss to Von Wagner. God dang it, Nate. Von Wagner has a pretty decisive loss to Bron Breakker. And all of a sudden, like, yeah, I mean, I feel like his momentum is kind of killed there a little bit. I'm willing to give it a bit of a pass and kind of see where they go from here, because they, you know, it's pro wrestling. They could talk their way out of it next week or something like that. But it's not my favorite. It's certainly not my favorite. I think I would like to see the two of them kind of get away from each other after a little bit. Like, I think there's going to be one match between Von Wagner and Bron Breakker. There needs to be, as I said, Von Wagner was, you know, almost murdered on live TV here. Almost his kappa was detained. And he's got to come back. He's got to get, you know, sew his head back on or something like that. And come back and challenge. I'm just thinking of, like, Nearly Headless Nick from Harry Potter for some reason. I'm ADD. That's where my brain goes. And all of a sudden, like, in the middle of a match, like, Von Wagner's head just kind of flops to the side. It's amusing in my brain, but that's a scary place, my brain. I think you get the point, what I was talking about here. It doesn't really make sense to me why they've gone this way with Von Wagner, why he has kind of had this big push, but now his big, big match here, the one that he's vowed he's going to win, he's losing, and he lost pretty definitively, even after putting Bron Breakker through a table, which is what he vowed to do. I was kind of hoping that conviction in, like, I'm going to table you, was going to lead to the win, which, I mean, almost did. And, you know, then he'd be able to kind of talk about that, how he had a win over Bron Breakker, former two-time champion, blah, blah, blah. He kind of build him up a little bit from there. Bron Breakker here as the winner, just, I mean, Cena wins, LOL. Like, that's what I get. I even alluded to that in a very terrible joke I made earlier when I said, you know, like, Hogan must pose. I mean, Roman must spear. I mean, you know, so they're going back to that kind of same formula that they went to with Hulk Hogan, well, more John Cena and Roman Reigns. This time they're trying to do it the opposite way, though, and they've already flipped him as a heel, but they're still kind of shoving him down our throats a little bit, and I don't think people are buying it the way they want them to be buying it. I don't, like, for me, it's go-away heat, and I don't give that a lot. Like, usually I try to give people the benefit of the doubt, and, like, you know, I'm like, all right, come on, I'll watch you. Let's watch you get better here. But at this point, like, I don't want to see this incarnation of Bron Breakker on my TV or my computer monitor, because I don't actually own a TV. I don't want to see that. Like, I don't want to see that. I would much rather see Bron Breakker evolve and give us a different incarnation of himself, and actually try to connect with the audience a bit more. He hasn't. He's never connected with the audience. His original character as a babyface was your everyday typical jock, right? And, like, I can't connect with a jock. I've never been a jock. I've never been a musclehead, right? I was always the weird goth kid, right? So, like, I can't connect with that. I can connect with, like, JC Jane. I can connect with, like, you know, Gigi Dolan. I can connect, you know, because, like, Rhea Ripley, like, because, hell, they look like my friends. Somebody like Bron Breakker, I think a lot of people have trouble identifying with somebody like, you know, that perfect lineage and all of that. But not only that, it's kind of just people don't want to root for somebody that's just your stereotypical, like, I'm good at everything, you know? And that's what his original character was. And that's what it is still. It's just, which I've already kind of talked about here, that's what it is still, but he's just, I don't know, it's not working. I don't know what it is. I don't know what exactly he needs to change to connect with the audience, but he's got to do something. Hopefully this more violent streak is it, but you can only get so violent in a PG environment. That almost rhymed. I didn't mean to do that on purpose. Kevin, thank you very much for sending in the email. And, hey, I just got to congratulate us on Kevin and I have actually hit 1 year on a snap streak on Snapchat, which is, you know, I don't know, like, that's dumb. It's not really anything to brag about, but, like, I don't know. That's kind of cool. Anyway, moving on. So let's go. And what else haven't I talked about here tonight? All right. We've talked about Vaughn versus Braun. We've talked about, let's talk. I brought up Gigi Dolan. So, and JC Jane. So let's talk about them. We had a match between Gigi Dolan and Thea Hale. Thea Hale, people, she has broken bad. She's wearing black. She's not going to class anymore. She's still repping Chase University, but she's certainly not the same hyperactive, happy-go-lucky, plucky little classmate Thea Hale that everybody knew and loved up to a couple weeks ago. No, she's now, I guess turning goth. We'll hang out. That's cool. That's kind of where they're going with this. And she's kind of, she's wearing darker makeup and she's hanging out with JC Jane. They showed her, past couple of weeks hanging out with JC Jane and things like that. Tonight, they showed her backstage talk with her. Gigi Dolan walks up to the two of them. And she's basically trying to, like, talk her out of hanging out with JC and being like, look, if nobody knows JC Jane like I do, she's not one to be trusted. You're a good, you're a good person. Like, don't be doing this. And basically, Gigi Dolan, she's trying to do the right thing. Make sure this young soul here, Thea Hale, 19, 20 years old, didn't go down the wrong path in the wrestling biz, you know? So, like, I get it. It's fine. It's cool. And, good on you, Gigi, for being a bro or a sis or, I don't know, what do girls call each other? But that. Good on you for being that. There's that. But like, to me, it was just kind of like, Gigi, mind your own business. Gigi, she's doing her thing. Like, it's either a phase or she'll figure herself out. But, yeah, she'll be fine. JC Jane and Blair Davenport, for that matter, she interjected here as well, kind of agreed with what I'm saying. I guess I'm going heel on this year. Hey, she doesn't need anything. She doesn't need to be, you don't need to tell her what to do or whatever. She's not a child, which is kind of hilarious. Like J.C. James being like, you know, you don't need to tell. She's a woman. You know, she makes up her own thoughts, right? And she's like, yeah, I'm a woman. I make up my own mind, which was kind of hilarious because it was basically J.C. James manipulating Thea Hale there without Thea really noticing. And it was done in a subtle way where unless you caught J.C. James like smirk at the end, you might not even pick it up. So I'm kind of thinking that JC is kind of trying to manipulate and use Thea Hale here for her own personal gain. Don't know what that personal gain is going to be, but, you know, we'll, wrestling, we'll get there. We'll get there. We'll find out. But overall, I kind of dig it. I like what Thea Hale's doing here. It's different for her. I think she's starting to be, you know, she could show a little bit more range of the character. I do miss the crazy, over-the-top Thea Hale, but for as much as I love that, there's a ceiling there. You know, you can only be R-Truth for so long if you want to be an actual champion in the business. So speaking of R-Truth, where the hell is he? Is he coming back? He was injured, got injured in NXT. He was out for a long time. And I don't know. I want a good R-Truth segment sometime soon here. But, you know, yeah, you could only be in that spot for so long if you want to actually be a champion. So I think you know, Thea Hale, if she wants to be taken seriously in the business, and they want her to be taken seriously in the business, yeah, they're going to have to start pushing her a little bit more the way that they're pushing her now with JC Jane, giving her a little more credibility, getting her a win like she got here tonight. Definitely dig it. And fingers crossed, they're kind of continue to go in this direction with Thea Hale. I really like her. I think that there is a lot, there's a big upside for Thea Hale. She's still young. She's got a lot to learn still in the ring, although she is a hell of a lot better than she was even a year ago, even 6 months ago, between the ropes, actually in a match. You know, her last, like her match against Tiffany Stratton a couple weeks ago for the title, like that was actually a pretty good match for a long match, a couple of botches, whatever, but like I got to, you know, hats off to her. I had a point, and Kelly or Bruce, they're not here to remind me what I was just talking about, so I apologize, because, like, you know, it's getting late, and I don't remember what I was talking about. Long story short, Thea Hale, like what she's doing, turning kind of a Breaking Bad type, well, not, she's not cooking meth, guys, she's not that kind of Breaking Bad, but you know what I mean, she's turning bad, she's, you know, and I like it, I dig it, I think it's a good character development story for her. All right, let me archive Kevin's email so it's not staring at me, and I think I have another one, and let's go talk about the Heritage Cup Invitational, the Global Invitational. It's not the Terry Invitational, that's all I know. 90s wrestling was a weird time. What the hell? I remember what the acronym was, but I can't remember what it actually stood for. Terry Invitational Tournament. That's what it was. That's what it was. Okay. Did not think I'd be talking with Terry Runnels on this podcast tonight, but then again, I didn't think I'd be talking about Hornswoggle on, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post show with Kelly on Friday either. So, hey, speaking of which, good time to plug the fact that I'm going to be on Wrestling Night in America with Greg Parks on Sunday, talking about wrestling during the night in America. So there we go. You can catch us right here on the Daily Cast, 515-605-9345, if you want to give us a call, talk about it, and you know, talk about wrestling and whatever. I mean, mostly wrestling, not really whatever, mostly wrestling. Or you could email us at whatever his email address is. I got to look it up. I think it's wnialivecast@gmail.com. But if you don't find it, just email me and I'll just forward it to him. That's pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. All right. Anyway, let's keep moving on. The not Terry Reynolds Invitational Tournament. We had the Heritage Cup Global Invitational Tournament, or something like that. The words Global Heritage and Tournament, or sorry, Global Heritage and Invitation to learn there. I just don't remember in which order. We had two matches for this. We had a match between Axiom and Butch. We also had a match between Duke Hudson and Nathan Fraser. Fraser, Kelly's not here. Make fun of me. So whatever. It. However I pronounce it tonight, it's how I pronounce it. God damn it. So the first match of the night, the first match of the Invitational for the night was Duke Hudson versus Frazier, Group B match. We did see a relatively short contest here where Frazier picked up a win. I want to say it was about 5 minutes. I don't have Bruce's report up in front of me right now with times or whatever. But I want to say it was about 5 or so minutes. It seemed like it was I wrote it. It was about 6 minutes. Basically, this whole match, and it was kind of funny because both Duke Hudson and Nathan Frazier come into this match with one loss. But they didn't mention the fact that Duke Hudson came into this match with one loss. They only talked about Frazier's loss. Hudson's loss took place on Level Up, so nobody saw that anyway. But they kept talking about how if Frazier loses, his chances of winning are like impossible and all this stuff, right? Because then, you know, he's going to be down 2-0 and you don't want to be down 2-0 when, you know, you need points to win. It's going to be hard for him to win, right? But nobody's talking about Duke Hudson and how he also needs the points to win and move on in the Invitational here. So that bit of, negligence on the part of commentary, if you will, kind of leads me to believe that if I didn't already believe already, which I totally did, that Nathan Frazier is probably going to the finals or at least going to go and maybe potentially win the tournament to face Noam Dar for the Heritage Cup that he just lost to Noam Dar. But it sounds like he's going to be going kind of far in this, just the way that they've been talking to him or talking about him here, in this match, but also in the one that he had last week as well. Kind of a big focus on his involvement in the tournament. And again, that could just be because he is the former Heritage Cup champion, but this is pro wrestling. They're telling stories. There is a reason that they keep pointing him out in particular. So that's why I think they're doing that. We also had another match between Butch and Axiom. I'm going to call him Pete Dunne because I know he's Butch. I know he's been Butch for a long time now, but he's Pete Dunne in my head, and I'm going to trip over my words if I don't. So we saw Pete Dunne versus Axiom in Group A action tonight here. This was actually, I think, my favorite Heritage Cup, the Invitational match so far. And I really like this for the story that they were telling here. Butch kind of coming back down from the main roster. Well, of course, I say I'm going to call him Pete Dunne, and then, of course, I call him Butch, right, without even thinking. All right, whatever. I'm going to call him what I call him. Butch coming back down from the main roster in NXT, and, like, he's... As you could imagine with the main roster star, he's probably got a little bit of like, I'm better than you. I'm on the main roster. I know more, so he's got that kind of swagger about him, And so there is that. He basically was looking to pick up a 2-point victory here, which I think he did in his first one. I don't have the score right in front of me, but I think I remember Vic Joseph talking about how he already got 2 points by getting a submission victory in his first match, and he was looking to do the same thing again here tonight. And that was kind of the story of the match. He was trying to get a submission, locked in on Axiom. Axiom would wiggle out of it, had a kind of a response for just about everything that Butch was throwing at him, and so much so that Butch could not quite get not just a submission, but even a pinfall off on him before the 12-minute time limit was up. So it was kind of cool the way that happened here. It even though Axiom spent the majority of the match getting his ass kicked, not all of it, but a good portion of it getting his ass kicked by Butch, he comes off of this looking kind of like $1 million, right? Because he's showing his heart. He's showing how much heart and dedication he has to his craft by constantly kicking out of one pin after another, after another, after another. And, not allowing, a submission move to be locked in on him or, not letting, Butch, get the finger lock in or stretch the fingers or anything like that. Just kind of anything that Butch is trying to do, he was able to he had an answer for it. I really liked the way that the match was laid out. The fact that it came to a draw might be a little bit underwhelming for some people, but I think personally, if for me, because I was following that kind of story of the match of, you know, of Butch not quite being able to get the submission locked in, it worked, you know, it definitely worked. These tournament style matches like this, you know, especially that are done in blocks and you've got a whole bunch of people facing a whole bunch of other people, that there may not necessarily be a story there outside of this whole invitational, of course. You've got to make up a story, and that's kind of what I felt like they did here in this match, you know, with Butch trying to get, you know, 2 points to get a big lead, you know, of 4 points over everybody else in his group. So I dug it. This was, like I said, this went exactly 12 minutes, went to the time limit, which wound up giving each one of them 1 point each. So that was kind of cool. Let's move on here. Actually, let me go back. Do we have anybody else on the phone lines? No. Okay. So let's, I can't tell. There's somebody has their hand up, but I can't tell if it was Ryan. I think it's still Ryan. Okay. All right. Yeah, it was 914. Okay. Yeah. All right. I'm moving on. Okay. So let me move on here to, we've talked a little bit about Dragon Lee and Ali, talked about Tyler Bate and Kato, Hudson and Frazier. So let's go and let's talk about Ilya Dragunov versus Oro Mensah. So this was a match we saw, I think it was the second match of the night. I don't really have a whole heck of a lot to say about this match here. Ilya Dragunov picking up a win over Oro Mensah. This was like, if there was a story going on here, like from last week or something, it escaped me, and there really wasn't like a recap of it at the beginning of the match here. So for me, it was kind of like a bit of an exhibition type of match where you know, Ilya Dragunov was just in a match trying to get a win, and Metaphor needs something to do, or Mensah needs something to do to kind of like, you know, progress their story while the invitational is going on, since Noam Dar does have the cup, and you know, that's really the big focus of their group. That's kind of the way that I felt about it. I could be wrong and I might have missed something, and if I did, I apologize. But that's kind of where I thought it was there. This, you know, it was a great match. It was a fantastic match, as you might expect out of, of course, Dragunov. But if you've been watching and keeping up with Oro Mensah, every time he's in the ring, he impresses me. He's definitely got it. He's got to work on his character and like promo stuff and whatever. But in the ring, he's super fluid. I really like his in-ring style. He doesn't seem to be, actually, let me rephrase that. He seems to be picking up the WWE style of wrestling pretty quickly, considering, you know, I think it's about 6 months or so he's been in NXT or so, or at least debuted on TV, not necessarily just in NXT system. But definitely dig what he's doing. Love what Metaphor is doing right now. And I really can't wait until we get a little bit more towards the end of the Invitational, so we see kind of like Noam Dar start freaking out, like, who's my opponent, you know, and or maybe he's super cocky, right, and he thinks he can take him, and then, you know, like day before he gets super scared or something like that. Noam Dar and the kind of his range with this character is awesome, and I'm really looking forward to kind of like what happens when he finds out who his opponent's going to be, whoever that is. And I want to see what his reaction is going to be. Like, is he going to be super confident, or is he going to be like freaking out? And I think obviously time will tell, but I think it's also going to depend on who his opponent is. All right, let's keep moving on here. I think, yeah, I think that might actually be just about it. So I had a couple other things that happened on the show here tonight. So Diamond Mine's come back. They're no longer donning their yellow masks as a fake part of Schism to kidnap Ava and then not get in trouble for it. As you do in pro wrestling, apparently the NXT building in Florida, it does not actually count in Florida's jurisdiction for laws and things. So, you know, you can throw people in trunks and commit murder. D'Angelo, I'm looking at you. You know, or Bron Breakker after tonight, I'm looking at you. And it doesn't really matter. So, you know, NXT parking lot, the most dangerous place on earth, or at least in Florida. And that's saying something. No, Florida, I love you. You get Disney. I'm going to be there very soon, actually. I'll be there in a month. Going to Disney. Unfortunately, I'm not going to NXT. Not going to NXT. But with any luck, I'll be hanging out with Tom Stope. So that'll be cool. So, yeah, Diamond Mine, they're back. They put their flag back up and, backstage talking with Ivy Nile. Like I said, they put the Diamond Mine flag back up, kind of talking about how they're back. Diamond Dojo's back. And we came back to Diamond Dojo quite a few times here tonight because D'Angelo and Stax show up in the dojo in the first segment here and kind of like, you know, go back and forth, a little bit of banter. We weren't sure at first if it was like super friendly banter or not until the Creed said to to D'Angelo and Stax, like, hey, I know we haven't always seen eye to eye, but you know what? Thank you guys for stepping up and making sure Ivy Nile was like, all right, or we were, you know, we weren't here and stuff, which they did. They stood in and I think it was a match against Gallus, if I'm not mistaken. It wasn't Gallus. Sorry. Schism. It was Schism because it was an intergender six-person tag with the Dyad and Ava. Stax, D'Angelo, and Ivy Nile. We had that segment there. And they can't, like I said, there was a few of these segments going on throughout the course of the night, going back to Diamond Dojo. And we had all the different tag teams just kind of showing up. The first one was an Ofe and Blade. Was it an Ofe and Blade? Sorry, let me go back here. No, the first one to show up was actually Stax and D'Angelo. The second one was an Ofe and Blade. We also saw Hank and Tank. We saw Los Lotharios as well. There might have been one other team that I'm not. There was Lucien Price and Bronco Lima. Of course, Bruce isn't here to laugh at me when I say it wrong. So, Lucien and Bronco, they definitely said their names are Lucien and Bronco. And I think it's Lucien Price. So, you got that one at least. But they all showed up and kind of explained like who they are, kind of reintroduced every single tag team, whether they needed it or not. And kind of like almost like a bit of a revitalization for the tag division here. Which is probably a good thing because, like, I don't even remember. Is it Gallus? Wow. Who the heck are the tag champions right now, Nate? Let me look. Going to WWE.com. I'm scrolling down. Holy crap. If you go to WWE.com and go to the Superstars page, you start scrolling down, you will be greeted by the largest picture of Chelsea Green and Piper Niven you've ever seen. That's bizarre. Anyway. The current Stax and D'Angelo. Jesus, I was just talking about them as champions. Stax and D'Angelo. It is getting late. It's been a long day. Sorry if my brain's a little bit more fried than it was maybe about 40 minutes ago at the start of this thing. I also haven't stopped talking in like 45 minutes. We have Stax and D'Angelo as the champions here. And like I said, every other kind of tag team saying, you know, who they are, reintroducing themselves and giving a bit of a reason why they should have the next shot at the tag team titles. D'Angelo and Stax kind of trying to figure out who that team was going to be, kind of ultimately didn't come to that before the end of the show. I'm really leaning for Ofe and Blade. They've been around for a while now. I feel like they deserve another title shot. I would love to see them with the belts around their waist. Although, maybe it's not the time to give them a title shot then because it's not time for D'Angelo and Stax to lose the belts yet. They're still kind of infant. They're in the infancy with the title reign. I wouldn't want to take it off of them just yet. So maybe not Blade and Ofe because if you face them now, they're just going to lose. But that's certainly a possibility. Yeah, so that, like I said, that's kind of what, you know, where it is. I'm looking, kind of curious to see where they go with that, and like how they wind up. You know, is it going to be a tournament? Is it going to be like a fatal four-way tag type match? You know, between these four teams. You know, and then there's also Gallus is involved here too. Gallus wasn't actually here in this segment, but Gallus, they didn't show up. Dyad didn't show up. You know, so there's a few other teams around too that, you know, could potentially show up as well. But these ones here kind of, you know, to kind of start talking about the tag team division, looks like it's a bit of a revitalization of the tag division here. At least how it felt to me. With that, I think that's going to bring me to the end of my show here tonight. We're going to be pretty quick here. There's a couple other things I don't know a couple other things I didn't bring up, like a couple of interviews backstage and whatever. But for the most part, everything we kind of touched on all of that anyway, just maybe not the actual interview, but the other angles and stuff. Guys, I'm Nate Lindberg. Thank you for sticking with me here tonight while I rambled my way through a solo podcast. You can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg or on X at Nate Lindberg. I do the NXT hits and misses, which, like I said earlier, I don't have up just yet because WordPress was being WordPress. But if I can wrangle my way through WordPress tonight and get them up, I will. If not, the hits and misses for tonight will be up soon. You can also check out Bruce Hazelwood's report on NXT tonight, play-by-play report, up on pwtorch.com. If you would like to read a play-by-play kind of what happened on the show here tonight, Bruce and Kelly Wells are usually here with me tonight. And when they are here doing stuff, they switch off doing that live report. Tonight was Bruce's night, but you can certainly check that out. You know, as the show, they're both updating it live as the show goes on. So you can, you know, kind of get an idea of what's going on with the show. If you can't watch live or something, you can refresh their page and, you kind of get like, I'd say up to the minute, but yeah, they might be like 10 minutes behind. Yeah, sometimes you get it. It takes a little bit of time to write and whatever, but you know, mostly up to the minute live coverage of NXT on pwtorch.com, written by Kelly or Bruce. And then, like I said, I do the hits and misses, and with any luck, I will have one of the two of them here next week to prevent me from rambling for about an hour. So with that, guys, I will see you next week. Take care.